Hey, you're tuned in to the Bird Podcast, live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Two weeks ago, I told you a story about Buster, this dog my wife and I used to own, who repeatedly tempted fate, but always refused to die. I told you about this story where he got hit by a car, flew through the air, somehow did not faze him. Here's another story. When we first got Buster, he was this cute little puppy, and we thought, man, he's always cramped up in our little apartment. We should take him somewhere where he can run free. So we took him to this field near where we lived in Virginia at the time, and we took him out, and we said, look, Buster, here's this whole field, go! And Buster, you know, we were like, run in the field! But Buster ran out of the field. He started running for the road where all the cars were. So my wife and I start chasing him, and Buster runs right into the road. I look and I see this 18-wheel truck coming barreling down at him. Buster looks up and sees it, and he just froze. He's just staring at it, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, oh no, this puppy we just got. So I ran out, dove, covered him up, and just waited to get hit by the truck. I hear screeching brakes, and I look up, and the truck stopped like 10 inches from us. I picked up Buster. I went back to my wife, who said, Vince, that was amazing. You are a hero. And I said, that was the dumbest decision I have ever made. She's like, no, you were a hero. I'm like, no, that was the dumbest decision I have ever made. In this series, we're talking about death to selfie. We're learning this counterintuitive principle that we find life when we lose our lives. We find life when we're willing to die to ourselves, and instead of living for ourselves, our goals, our wants, our agendas, we start living for God and for others. And every time we do that, and that is the wisest decision we could ever make. Dying for a dog, maybe not. Dying for God and others, wisest decision we could ever make. Now, by our nature, we are very selfish people. We all are, and we live in a very selfish culture. It's all about self. But Jesus told us that the best thing we can do for ourselves is die to ourselves. That we have to die if we want real life. So far in this series, we've talked about dying to ourselves so we can really live for God. And then last week, we talked about dying to control, being willing to let go of control so we can trust God and experience the life that He wants to steer us into. Today, we need to die to ourselves so we can live for others. We need to die to ourselves so we can live for others. What do I mean? Well, God calls us to die for others. The Bible says that we really live when we die for others, but we will never truly die for others if we're living for ourselves. So we need to die to ourselves so we can live for others. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about dying to ourselves. And here's what's weird. When we live for ourselves, we focus a lot on other people. We live for ourselves. We focus a lot on other people. We look at them, but we look at them maybe to evaluate them. Right? We're not evaluating them because of love, because we're trying to understand them and see how we can serve them. No, we're evaluating them in comparison to ourselves. Really, evaluating is all about me, right? Like, does he have a better job than me? Is she thinner than I am? Is his girlfriend hotter than mine? Does she have nicer clothes, a better haircut? Is his car cooler than mine? Is it more expensive? Are her kids better behaved than mine? When we look at other people, it's really not about them, it's about us. We evaluate them to compare ourselves to them. If they come up lacking, if we think we're better or we have better, well, we can't help but judge them a little. Or if we think that they're better or have better, we can't help but be a little jealous. Not only do we look at other people to evaluate them, we also look at other people because we crave their approval. We crave their approval. And wanting their approval isn't because they're so important to me. It's because I'm so important to me. So I want other people to like me and respect me. I need their validation. And this is one of the reasons that God calls us to die to ourselves. Because then we can stop judging other people and we can stop living for the approval of other people. When we die to ourselves, then we live for God. We play our lives for an audience of one. He's the only one whose approval I'm seeking. And here's the thing with God. He loves us with a perfect love. And so we don't have to earn his approval. We don't have to earn his love because we already have it. And so we die to ourselves, which allows us to live for God. And really, this is at the core of what it means to live life as a Christian. I'm going to show you a few verses in the Bible. By the way, we have a Velcro bar in the back. It's our connecting place. If you have any questions or want to meet somebody today after the service. And at the Velcro bar, we have Bibles. If you don't have a Bible at home, don't have an easy-to-read Bible at home, we would love to give you a Bible today as a free gift. So we'll put all the verses on the screen. Galatians chapter 1, verse 10. It says, obviously, I'm not trying to win the approval of people, but of God. If pleasing people were my goal, I would not be Christ's servant. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4. Our purpose is to please God, not people. He alone examines the motives of our hearts. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. As for me, it matters very little how I might be evaluated by you or by any human authority. I don't even trust my own judgment on this point. My conscience is clear, but that doesn't prove I'm right. It is the Lord himself who will examine me and decide. So we die to ourselves and we live for God. And what that means for us is freedom. It's freedom. It means we don't have to worry anymore about what everyone else thinks. We don't have to impress them. We don't have to hope we're better than other people or act like we're better than other people. We don't have to judge people. And what all that means is that finally we are free to really love other people. Listen, we can't really love other people when we're focused on ourselves. We can try. And we do, right? We try to love people. We try to love them, but it's not a pure love because I can't help but also be focused on what's in it for me. So it's like, yeah, I can love you and I can have some compassion for you and I can serve you, but at the same time, I need something from you. I need your approval. I need you to be grateful for what I've done for you because that makes me feel better about me. I can't help it. I'm living for myself. And so I can never truly do something for someone else because there's always me mixed in it. Now, I love the way this Christian author named Henry Nouwen says this. He writes, in order to be of service to others, we have to die to them. That is, we have to give up measuring our meaning and value with the yardstick of others. To die to our neighbors means to stop judging them, to stop evaluating them, and thus to become free to be compassionate. Compassion can never coexist with judgment because judgment creates the distance, the distinction, which prevents us from really being with the other. Do not judge and you will not be judged yourself is a word of Jesus that is indeed very hard to live up to, but it contains the secret of a compassionate ministry. So when we die to ourselves and live for God, we can finally really love other people, which is exactly what we're called to do, to live for God and die for others. Check out John chapter 15, verse 13. Jesus is speaking. He says, there is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. 1 John 3:16 says, we know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life for us. So we also ought to give up our lives for our brothers and sisters. This is what Jesus was like. One of the things I love about Jesus is that he was never controlled by other people. Right? We can be controlled by other people, what they want, what they think, getting their validation, not Jesus. Like there was one time when all the people decided that they love Jesus and want to make him their king. And Jesus says, no, that's not why I came. And everyone gets offended and they get upset. And he's totally okay with that because he doesn't live for their approval. There's another time where he miraculously feeds thousands of people. And the next day they all show up because they're hungry and they want another meal. And he says, no, not today. And everyone's mad and they storm away. And he's okay with that because he doesn't live for their approval. Jesus was absolutely fearless. He calls the government leader Herod a fox. He calls to their faces the religious leaders, the Pharisees. He calls them whitewashed tombs and a brood of vipers. He calls one of his best friends. He says to him, get behind me, Satan. Okay, Jesus wasn't controlled by other people because he lived for God, not for them. And because he didn't live for them, he could really love them and he could die for them. And I don't mean die just as in the end of his life, what he did on the cross. I mean die for them, lay down his life for them on a daily basis. In the same way that we are called to die for others on a daily basis. One of the things that's really interesting, I think, about Jesus when you read about him in the Bible is how often the Bible points out that he looked at a person. Over and over it says he looked at people. In fact, over 40 times in the Bible it says Jesus looked at someone. See, when you live for yourself, you want other people to look at you. When you die to yourself, you look at other people. Right? When you live for yourself, you want other people to look at you. But when you die to yourself, you can look at other people. Jesus looked at other people, and seeing those other people led him to love them, to have compassion on them, and to serve them, to meet their needs. I'll show you an example. John chapter 9, starting in verse 1. It says, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Rabbi, means teacher, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins, Jesus answered. This happened so the power of God could be seen in him. We must quickly carry out the task assigned us by the one who sent us. The night is coming and then no one can work. But while I am here in the world, I am the light of the world. Then he spit on the ground, made mud with the saliva, and spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. He told him, go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. Siloam means sent. So the man went and washed and came back seeing. The disciples saw this guy and they evaluate him and he comes up lacking, so they elevate themselves and judge him. Jesus looked at him and loved him. He had compassion for him, so he lowers himself to care for him, to serve him. And that's the way Jesus always was. He lived for God, so that meant he could love others. And it started with seeing them. So I wonder, when we look at people, is it usually that you look at someone else to evaluate them, which maybe leads you to judge them, or maybe it's craving their approval, or is it to really love them, to understand them, usually leading to compassion and caring for them? What about when you see the person who just cut you off on the highway, when you look at that person? Or what about when you deal with a person at work or your friend who is so needy? What about when your teenager does what your teenager always does? What about when you see a homeless person? How about when your spouse doesn't do the thing that your spouse said your spouse was going to do? How about when you're dealing with someone who is so different from you, maybe way more educated or way less educated, or they have very contrasting political views to yours? Like, when you see that person, do you evaluate them and judge, or do you love and show compassion and care? Here's what I found. Evaluating people, judging them, is really easy, and you can do it really fast. It doesn't interrupt your schedule at all. But loving someone, looking at someone with compassion and caring for them, you gotta like pause. You gotta step out of your agenda. It is not efficient to love people, to care for people. It takes time. But it's what we're called to do. It's what Jesus calls his followers to do. It's what he did. There's another Christian author, his name is Paul Miller. He says this: we'll often notice things wrong with people, but does that initial look lead to compassion and helping, or to judging and distance? Compassion and judging are two different ways of seeing. When we stop judging, we rest from the incessant work of analyzing others. We don't need to figure out what's wrong with people. That's God's job. Our job is to try to understand. The blind man in John chapter 9, this guy, and his life was changed. He found a story and he found glory in the most unexpected place. His blindness. He couldn't see, but Jesus saw him. Jesus really looked at him. Others took a brief glance and quickly judged him. But Jesus really looked at him, understood, and instead of thinking about himself, he thought about what that blind man needed, and he served him. And if we're going to really follow Jesus, then that is the life that we are called to, a life of not thinking about ourselves. It's a death to selfie life, a life of really looking at other people, understanding, and doing what we can to love them and care for them. There's a guy named Robert McQuilkin. His wife's name was Muriel McQuilkin. I like to think that she was like a tournament quilter. And when she met people, she'd be like, "Hi, I'm Muriel McQuilkin, and quilting's my game. I'm the quickest quilter in Quebec." She's not from Quebec, but I like to imagine that, because that would be kind of cool to meet her, right? So this Robert McQuilkin guy was the president of a university and an esteemed guy. And as he was president, his wife developed Alzheimer's disease. She increasingly forgot things, couldn't keep track of things. It became increasingly difficult. And soon Robertson, the university president, was cleaning up his wife when she forgot to use the toilet. And then not much later, he was changing her diapers and cleaning her all the time, because there was no chance that she would ever remember to use the toilet. And eventually, Robertson decided to step down from his job as university president so he could just full-time, all the time, care for his wife. Well, his friends told him that he was wrong. Muriel didn't even know him anymore. She didn't even recognize who he was. And so they said, like, why put an end to your career? Just put her in a nursing home. She'll be well taken care of, and you can continue to live your life and be the president of the university. Makes sense. Not to him. He did not listen. A while later, he quit being president. And after he quit, somebody asked him, "Do you miss being president?" And he writes about how that question kind of stayed with him as he went to bed that night. And he writes this: "I didn't sleep well that night and awoke contemplating the puzzle. Muriel was still mobile at the time, so we set out on our morning walk around the block. She wasn't too sure on her feet, so we went slowly and we held hands as we always do. This day I heard footsteps behind me and looked back to see the familiar face of a local derelict behind us. He staggered past us, then turned and looked us up and down. 'That's good. I likes it,' he said. 'That's real good. I likes it.' He turned and headed back down the street, mumbling to himself over and over again, 'That's good. I like it.' When Muriel and I reached our little garden and sat down, his words came back to me, and then the realization hit me. God had spoken through an inebriated old derelict. It is you who are whispering to my spirit, I liked it. That's good, I said aloud. And if you like it and say it's good, that's all that counts. And he had died to himself, and that allowed him to live for God. Right? He lived his life for an audience of one, and it didn't really matter what everyone else said. And dying to himself allowed him to die for his wife. One time, a student of his asked him if he ever tired of caring for Muriel. He replied with a laugh. He said, tired every night. That's why I go to bed. The student nodded. She said, no, and looked over at Muriel, whose vacant eyes signaled that no one was home. No one was home. And she said, no, I mean, tired of, and Robertson answered her. He cut her off. He said, why, no, I don't get tired. I love to care for her. She's my precious. Robertson chose love over self-fulfillment. What we want are relationships that are mutually beneficial, right? It's like I have no problem meeting someone else's needs as long as they also meet my needs. Listen, if it's real love, you're willing to lay down your life for the other person. I'm not talking about being willing to literally die if the occasion arose, because that's easier. That's easier, and that's not gonna happen. I'm talking about a daily death to self that allows us to die for other people. What's sad, I think, is in our world, I think we question if that kind of love is even possible. Like, can people really love like that? In fact, at one point, Robertson went to a workshop, a seminar for people who have a family member with Alzheimer's, and he writes this. He says, an expert told us that there were two reasons people keep a family member at home rather than in a nursing facility: economic necessity or feelings of guilt. Afterwards, I spoke with her privately, trying to elicit some other possible motive for keeping someone at home, but she insisted those were the only two motives. Finally, I asked, what about love? Oh, she replied, we put that under guilt. Like there's no way someone could just love someone else unconditionally. Like, there's no way someone would love someone if they weren't getting back anything in return. I don't know. Maybe that's actually true without God. But when we become recipients of God's unconditional love, we have it to give to other people. If it allows us to finally die to ourselves so we can live for God, so we can die for others. Right? We die to ourselves so we can die for others. So here's the question I've been wrestling with, and I think we all need to wrestle with. How is God calling you to die for someone else? How is God calling you to die for someone else? Because he is, okay? He is calling you to die for others. Maybe you haven't seen that because you've been living for yourself. Maybe when you look at other people, it's not with compassion. Instead, it's for comparison, or it's craving their approval. But God is calling us to live a life of love. And the center of love is death. It always is. The center of real love is always death. It's a death to me. It's a death to what I want. It's a death to my rights. So what would it look like for you to live that way? Maybe you're in a Verve group here at church. We have these small groups that meet every week. And so maybe it means showing up at your Verve group. First, it means showing up at your Verve group, even if you're not really in the mood to go and you just don't want to go today, because you realize that group isn't for me. It's for the other people. Like, I don't go to it thinking, what can I get out of this today? I think go there thinking, what can I give today? How can I love the people in my group? I need to be there because they might need me, even if I don't want to be there. Or work. But like, maybe it means showing up at your job thinking, I'm here to serve. I'm not in this job for me. I'm here to serve others. or how about in your family? Maybe in your family, everyone just kind of leaves their dirty dishes in the sink because we know eventually mom is going to take care of it. But that's not love. That's what's in it for me. Or what about church? Like when you show up here at church, why? Why do you show up? Is it because you want to get something for you? What if you started viewing church the way God views church, as his mission, and you're here to serve in his mission? Not what can you get, but what can you give? See, most people want church to serve them, which is totally natural because being selfish is the most natural thing for all of us. But God calls us to be a part of a church, not to be served, but to serve. God calls every follower of Jesus to have a volunteer position in their church where they're actively a part of serving others. And if you don't have that right now, all right, like this is a great time to make up. You can make it a New Year's resolution. We would love to help you start serving. We've got a bunch of different teams you can serve on. We've got a bunch of different positions within each team. And if you decide, I want to start, we'll wait till January because we know the next couple weeks are a crazy time. If you do want to do that, we would love to help you. And you can use your connection card and just let us know, hey, I'd like to start serving, and we'll help you find a place where you will enjoy serving and you can be a part of serving others. Listen, God is calling us to live a life of love, and a life of love always, always includes death. It's a death to self. You may never have thought of this, but you see it, you know it, you just maybe never have thought this way. An exchange always occurs when there's love. An exchange always occurs when it's true love. You see this all the time. Like you see it in movies, Beauty and the Beast. So Belle loves her father, and she saves him from the beast by going in his place. So there's an exchange, her life for his life. Later in the story, the beast loves Belle, and so he allows her to leave, to return home. He gives up his hope of being loved so she can have freedom. He exchanges his happiness for her happiness. You see it with Jesus. So like there's this one time where Jesus is at this dinner party with all these respected religious leaders, and they're all sitting there respecting each other when a prostitute comes running into the room, and she does this flamboyant act of love and gratitude. She showers Jesus with gratitude, and Jesus receives her gesture of love, and everyone's dismayed. Like, does he even know who she is, and why doesn't he throw her out of here? See, Jesus exchanged his good reputation for her bad reputation. He got her shame, and she got his dignity. There's always an exchange with love. Robert McQuilkin, he did everything he could to relieve his wife's suffering, but in doing so, he took her suffering on himself, right? He exchanged his comfort for her discomfort. An exchange always occurs when there's love. So if my wife asks me to vacuum while I'm watching a game, well, to love her, I need to substitute my free time for hers. If you're at your office Christmas party or your cafeteria in school, and there's this table with your friends who you like to hang out with and it's comfortable, and there's this other table where there's a lonely person, this person at the office party, you might decide, you know what, I'm going to seek out the lonely person, and in doing so, I'm going to exchange my comfort, my happiness, for theirs. And that is exactly what we're called to do if we are followers of Jesus. It's what Jesus did at every opportunity. Like every day, we see him choosing to die to himself so he could meet other people's needs. And he kept explaining to everyone that he would soon go beyond meeting just their basic everyday needs for food or for sight. He said this, he said, Mark 10:45, he said that he came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. He said that he was going to die to give his life, and that in his death, he would meet our biggest need, which was life, eternal life. And it would be an exchange. The night before he was crucified, Jesus said in Matthew 26, he said, "For this is my blood, which confirms the covenant between God and his people. It is poured out as a sacrifice to forgive the sins of many. In God's economy, a death was required for the punishment that we deserve because of our sins. Earlier, Jesus had said, "I am the good shepherd. I sacrifice my life for the sheep." And even before that, the sacrifice of Jesus was described this way. It says, "All of us, like sheep, have strayed away. We have left God's path to follow our own. Yet the Lord laid on him the sins of us all. He was oppressed and treated harshly, yet he never said a word. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter." The good shepherd became the lamb. There was this exchange on the cross. Jesus took all our sin so we could receive his goodness. He took all our brokenness so we could be healed. He gave up his life so we could have life. And just like Jesus gave his life for us, we are called to give our life for others. We die to ourselves so we can live for God, so we can die for others. We die to ourselves so we can die for others. And listen, and every single time we make the decision to do that, as hard as it is the wisest decision we could ever make. We're going to give you a couple minutes to think about all this, because there is a lot to think about, you know? And so I would encourage you to maybe to ask these two questions of yourself. How is God calling you to die to yourself? Specifically, how is God calling you to die to yourself? And second, who is God calling you to die for? Who is he calling you to lay down your life for? During this time, our band's going to play one more song. And so you can kind of use this as a chance to think and pray. And we also have communion available, which is on the candlelit tables around the room. Communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that are a reminder of what Jesus did on the cross for us. They remind us of his body and blood. And we remember the exchange that he made on the cross. And it's a reminder of the kind of life that he's called us to live. So if you'd like to take communion, you certainly don't have to, but if you'd like to, you can get up during this song, get the bread and juice, bring it back to your seat, and you can take that when you're ready. Okay? Let me pray for you, and then we'll give you guys some time to pray. Yeah, this is not easy. This is a challenging series we're doing, where we're really trying to think, what life is it that you call us to? You know, we want this to be a life of self-fulfillment. You know, I added God to my life so I could be fulfilled. But the truth is that you call us to a life of pouring ourselves out. You call us to a life of dying to ourselves, and you make this promise to us that that's where life is found. That's how we find fulfillment, is not living for ourselves, but living for you and others. It's hard. It's hard because we don't live in a culture like that. It's hard because that does not come naturally to us. So God, would you help us to do that? And would you encourage us to know that you are not asking us to do that alone, that you walk with us each day, and you're there to empower us and encourage us. We never walk alone. We walk with your help, and we do this in your strength. We thank you for Jesus, who not only taught this life, but modeled it every day. And he modeled it when he went to a cross and died for us. And we thank you for communion as a reminder of that. We pray all these things in his name. Amen.